I didn't think about a woman on the throne. I felt that there was another monarch on the throne, and I realised here she was, a young woman with her husband in another country, in a Commonwealth country, when her father died. And that is what I thought about most of all. But I do remember the coronation poured with rain. And who was that wonderful queen from Tonga who was a big fat lady? And somebody said, "Who's that little fella at her side?" And somebody else said, "It's a lunch." And so, you know, we had a lovely time at the coronation. So that is what I remember most of all about it. Not the fact that here was a woman, but here was a wonderful young person who was taking over.
We're sitting in the House of Lords as we speak, and back in the early to mid-50s, you would have been in this building, but in a very different place to where you are now.
I came in through the back door, the tradesman's entrance almost in those days. I was a secretary working for a couple of members of parliament in the mid-1950s. I have been in this building a very long time. I think when we came here and you came here to do this recording, I said, well, we're going to a room. I've been here over 30 years. I've never heard of it, but I think we'll find it. And I think you found it first, didn't you?
One way in which this place would have been very different then is that most of the women who had been walking around the building would not have been members of parliament.
Oh, yes.
How would you characterise the parliamentary women of the 50s?
Oh, but they were powerful women. Barbara Castle, Bessie Braddock, certainly some conservatives, the blue-haired lady. Oh, there were few of them, but by Jove, they were certainly powerful people. They were really ladies that had to make their own way in this house because there were so few of them. And all of them did. They were all household names and certainly very challenging people.
And even on the Tory side, people like Irene Ward.
I'm glad you've reminded me that. Irene Ward, she sat on the back benches on the NES. And, she was very strident and very outspoken. They were characters. They got lots of panache and personality. And they had to have to get here in the first place anyway and to hold their own with all the men.
And for you, it was a, 20-year journey before you became a Member of Parliament in your own right?
It was a long time, yes. My first election was about 56, and I wasn't elected until 73. So I did it the hard way. There are some members, very all good luck to them, I suppose, who got elected the first time or even the second time. But I felt that I should have gone into the Guinness Book of Records for the girl most unlikely to succeed. However, West Bromwich took me in 73 and I've never looked back since then.
Maybe the girl most unlikely to succeed, but she succeeded in pretty big way.
Well, I like to think so. It's rather nice, isn't it? I'm glad you think so. Thank you very much.
I wonder what the young Betty Boothroyd would have thought, if you can imagine back, because there you were, a lady of very strong political opinions, active in the Labour Party, would characterise yourself in those days, I guess, as a socialist.
Yeah.
What did you think of an institution like this? Because in some ways one might have thought that institutions like the House of Lords, the monarchy indeed, were the things that you might have thought were holding back many of the people from your background.
I'm sure that when I was in the Labour League of Youth at the age of 16 or 17, we would have debates on a Sunday night, and I'm sure one of the debates was to get rid of the monarchy, and probably I was on the side of getting rid of the monarchy. I just probably felt like that about it, and I'm not ashamed to say that. But when I came here, I had a huge respect for this institution, or whatever you might like to call it. It really is a wonderful place. I didn't give much thought to the House of Lords, I have to say, at that time. I was just determined about the Commons. I enjoyed what I saw in the Commons and the privileges working here and how things were done. And I felt the same, too, when I was going to run for Speaker. I was encouraged by two or three of my colleagues, and I didn't want to at first because I thought, look, I've not done too badly. And they said, and then I thought, okay, Betty, just go for gold, does it? I'd been defeated so many times, once more didn't matter. But I just felt I'll go for gold. It is an institute that I just cherish. And to become its speaker is the greatest thing that ever happened to me.
When you look at the Commons, having had that experience, what do you make of the standards of behaviour? Has that changed? Because, of course, in your day, both the Speaker and indeed before as a backbench MP, they were pretty rowdy times.
Oh, of course. It's changed somewhat. I think it's rather more rowdy today, or maybe it's because I'm getting older that I feel it's a bit more rowdy. But I do think it's a bit more rowdy. But I must really nail that one because I have spoken in many parliaments in the world. They've been like morgues. If I haven't spoken, I've witnessed what goes on there. Silence. One member gets up, makes a speech, goes back to their seat, another one comes up. There is no cut and thrust of debate. There's no emotion. I never want my House of Commons to be like that. Certainly, I want a little noise. And it's not noise. It is the sound of democracy.
You want some passion in your politics?
Absolutely, I want passion in my politics. You know, the adrenaline has to flow. People come here to change the flow of the Thames, to get things done, to change things. They can't just sit there docile. I like the cut and thrust of debate, which happens in the Commons. It's absolutely splendid. Nowhere else in the world is it like this.
The Prime Minister's been getting a bit of flack lately over his remarks at Prime Minister's questions, some of the things he's saying when he gets a bit rattled. That's a behaviour question, I suppose.
Don't get me onto that. That's for the Speaker to deal with, not me.
Safely retired.
That's right, yeah.
One thing you're not retired from is the Order of Merit. What was your reaction when you were told that you were going to be invited to be a member?
I couldn't believe it. I had a letter from the Queen's private secretary saying that if she was minded to award me, and would I accept? I just couldn't believe it. I had to look up what it was. I mean, I knew about the Order of Merit vaguely, and of course it is a very, very important, very high honour. So I was very absolutely thrilled. And it is a very... the Queen gives a lunch once every 2 years for those in the Order of Merit, which is a very nice occasion. Very nice of her to do that. And then I have a badge, if you like to call it a badge. It says on for merit.
Can you describe that for us?
Yes, it is in blue and red. And it is made of enamel, red and blue enamel. And there's a motto in the middle of it saying for merit. Actually, when anything happens to me, when by that I mean when I turn my toes up, it has to be returned to the Chancery.
What's the atmosphere like among you and your fellow members of the Order when you meet?
I feel intimidated because they're such grand people in their own right in whatever they do, and I just feel a bit of an also-ran. I hope I'm not, but sometimes I feel like that. Sometimes I can feel quite humble, you know, and I'm very humble about this too.